Deaths from prescription pain medications on the rise. The season for exposure injuries is here again. And we'll also look at why it's not a good idea to take your own pacemaker out. Plus, we're going to have our interview segment with a pain management nurse on some of the things she has to say about managing patients' pain. If you want to check that out, it's here, right here for you. It's the MedicCast.
Transmitters? We don't need no stinking transmitters.
This is the MediCast, a podcast for EMS providers by EMS providers, featuring EMS news, products, tips, tricks, and commentary. So grab your gear and glove up. Here's today's show with the pod medic, Jamie Davis.
Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of the MedicCast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'd like to welcome everybody to the program this week. We have a great show coming up for you, including an interview segment to wrap up our pain management series this month on the show by having a pain management nurse. That's a nursing specialty where they actually learn different pain management techniques and work to integrate those techniques and work with patients who are having pain problems. And I thought it would be great to have her on the show and talk a little bit about her views on pain management and share with us in our field what she does and some ideas on managing pain in both acute care settings and long-term care settings. So check out this episode. That's coming up a little bit later on here, just after our news segment, and you should stay tuned for that. Of course, in the meantime, I do want to remind you to head over to the MedicCast blog, medicast.com/blog, where you'll find links to everything discussed in this episode, as well as our other episodes, and I hope you will do that. Follow up on the resources and information available there. There's a show notes link right at the top of the page. You'll find the most recent episode listed first, and you can scroll down and go back to find the episode you're looking for, and check out those episode links for the news, for the tip of the weeks, for the interview segments. They're all available for you there, and I urge you to check that out. I would also like to encourage you to get back in touch with me, whether it's by leaving a comment over on the show notes page or the articles over on the MedicCast blog, which is certainly a good way to do that. And of course, when you leave a comment there, it sends me an email, or send me an email directly. You can send those emails in to podmedic@mac.com. I love to hear from each and every one of you, and it is your emails and comments and suggestions here that really help make the show a lot better. And so I urge you to continue to do that and provide me some information on what you'd like to see or hear more of, a comment about a previous episode, maybe a tip you'd like to share with the rest of the MedicCast community. This is a community effort, folks. You know, I'm not the be-all, end-all of EMS and paramedics. It's not the case. I try to be a voice for EMS, but certainly not the absolute end decision to that, and I make mistakes, and I don't always know what it is all of you want to hear, so let me know, and let's become more interactive here on the MedicCast. We're going to get on into our news segment here, coming right up in just a sec. As we jump into this week's news items, we'll kick off with a story, a recent news report coming out of the CDC. They've, of course, periodically released figures on morbidity and mortality rates for different types of things in the United States. And they just released a recent report and basically said every day, 40 Americans are dying from prescription painkiller abuse. You know, huge numbers. We're talking about 15,000 adults dying from prescription pain abuse, pain medication abuse every single year. And that number has tripled in the last 10 years from where it was back in 1999. Most recent figures coming in from 2008-2009. So what are we looking at? What causes this problem? Well, some of it is from irresponsible prescribing by some physicians and some people that are, you know, quite honestly writing prescriptions for money so that they can pay their own bills and they don't care who they give the prescription to. But some of the other things just have to be related to people finding these pain pills and taking them. A lot of times I talk to people and parents in my area and say, you know, what do you have in your medicine cabinet? Do you know what you have in there? You know, the average person, you know, doesn't use all their medications when they get pain medications. Not everyone is addicted to Percocet or Vicodin or OxyContin. But they just leave it sit in the medicine cabinet because, hey, they might, you know, need something for pain sometime, and it'd be nice to hang on to it. And they have a few pills left. So, you know, what happens when the babysitter comes over and she goes in and sees the pain pills sitting in there, and it's an old prescription, and it's shoved to the back of the medicine cabinet, and maybe you'll never notice that it's missing. Probably won't. Or what's there in grandma's box from her hip replacement, and she didn't use all her pain medication, and kids take that. There's a lot of different ways people get a hold of prescription pain pills and abuse them. So there's a lot of things we can do in the EMS sector to kind of help to manage that. Be aware of what's going on in your community, what are more prevalent. Some areas use different drugs more so than others. So be aware of that and understand what to look at. You know, medications like Percocet, it isn't just the prescription pain medication that they're dealing with. It might be that medication contains something else like acetaminophen, and overdosing on that doesn't just have an opioid overdose effect, but we have the potential for a liver failure and death related to an acetaminophen overdose. So you really need to kind of start to understand what's being used in your area and utilize your pain, utilize your poison control centers, utilize your local resources at the hospital. You know, your pain management professionals, like your pain management nurses and doctors, really know what's going on in the community, and they're not the ones that are illegally prescribing. They're the ones that are helping people with legitimate problems, trying to manage their pain through numerous different types of things, not just drugs. But they do have a handle on what's out there and kind of see these patients. And so we need to look at this. We also need to treat it like it is. It is an illness. It is an addiction. It can be cured. It can be managed and dealt with through 12-step programs, through use of alternative medications to wean them off of the drug. There's a lot of things that can be done. So we need to treat these patients who do abuse these medications appropriately, get them the help they need, and try to hook them up with a caring resource. And it starts with us being a caring resource. Next up is, I guess, my seasonal update to let you know that the seasons have changed. Here in North America, it's getting colder. In the southern hemisphere, in Australia and other folks down there, you're getting a little warmer, right? Well, up here, it's getting colder. And so I actually saw the first of article to cross my page about somebody lost in the woods or having to deal with some kind of cold exposure injury. In this case, it was unfortunately an autistic child missing for 6 days in the woods near his house. He wasn't found all that far from his home, but it took 6 days for the rescuers to actually locate him. He was alive, thankfully, but shivering, cold, and wet, curled up amongst some leaves near a stream bed. So, you know, this is just goes to point out, hey, guess what, folks? It's time to review your protocols on dealing with cold injuries. Time to pull out your old textbooks. Time to go back and look at past Medicast episodes. I think we've covered cold injuries several times. Maybe I'll be covering it up, coming up here soon on the show. But certainly, time to be aware of what goes on, physiology of cold, and physiology of what happens to these patients, and how to best rewarm them according to your protocol and what you're allowed to do. Some people do active rewarming. Some people are more proponents of passive rewarming. They have pluses and minuses to both of them, but it may come down to what you're allowed to do in your system. So I just wanted to use this article again to point out, like I always do whenever the seasons change, what goes on in your area? What do you need to be prepared for as these seasons change? You may be in an area where it's a ski resort, and you're going to see more, this huge influx of people into your community that haven't been there for 6 months. And so you need to be prepared for higher call volume, different types of injuries, and different types of patients. So again, just wanted you to kind of keep this in mind, and this is a good reminder. And of course, it's a great article. The paramedics of, you know, a gentleman found the boy, called EMS, paramedics came in, began to treat him, started an IV, got him rehydrated, got him warmed up and out of his wet clothes, and got him the care he needed, and he ultimately will be better. So this is going to happen over the course of time, and you should be prepared to treat this patient in your area as your protocols allow. We'll close out the news today with a rather interesting story that just points out why it's not a good idea to do surgery on yourself. EMS providers were called to the group home where a man living there had complained of chest pain, went to his room while others called 911. When EMS arrived, the man was still complaining of chest pain, but he soon became unconscious. And in the back of the ambulance, when they removed his shirt, they found a stab wound in his upper chest and wondered what could have caused it. They initially thought it might have been an assault, but apparently it turns out the man had cut out and removed his own pacemaker. We're not sure why he did this. It was misfiring and causing him pain, but clearly he needed that pacemaker and he should have left it in there. Probably he's in a group home. Maybe he's mentally ill. Well, it doesn't say in the article, but certainly a very interesting thing. And the lesson learned here for the EMS professional out there is, you know, do a thorough assessment as quickly as possible. Perhaps, I'm not saying they would have definitely figured this out and saved this guy, because I'm not second-guessing this at all. I mean, there's no sign that there's any kind of foul play here or misdoing by the paramedics. But, you know, the lesson I learned here is make sure we're getting that full assessment, if necessary, for things that just don't add up or don't seem right. Maybe there might have been some indication that there might have been something else going on here, and maybe they could have, they would have seen some blood or something. Again, I'm not second guessing them. I'm just kind of thinking, all right, how would I make this different? What would I try to do if I could do this again if I was one of these paramedics? And that's, you know, what I try to do with all the calls like this. Not trying to say they did anything wrong, because they certainly didn't seem like they didn't. This guy was a whack job. But hey. This is one of those things, you never know what you're going to find. You show up for a routine chest pain call at a group home you probably go to 3 or 4 times a week, and it's just a routine call. Maybe this is a guy who's a frequent flyer. We'll never know, but you know, you have to be, you can't just walk in the door saying, oh, it's Joe's chest pain again, because when you show up and Joe's chest pain ends up being a chest stabbing, even if it's self-inflicted and he's pulled his pacemaker out, you just never know what you're going to find when you get that patient in the back of your unit and start doing your full assessment. So always be prepared to step back and reassess, and if something doesn't quite make sense, if that little nagging thought in the back of your head is saying, this isn't right, I need to think differently on this, then think differently. It's like that old Apple ad, think different. Don't be afraid to step back and it's like back the car up to the intersection and make the turn you were supposed to make because you misread the turn the first time. It's okay to do that. That's part of assessment. It's part of medicine. It's why we reassess patients. This just goes to show we can't just assume that the call we get from dispatch is exactly what we think it is. An elderly gentleman with chest pain could be anything. And this is clearly the case of it being anything. I'd love to hear your comments on this, this article or any of the articles here in the news or anything else on the show. So send those comments into podmedic@mac.com or call in on the voicemail line 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. What would you do if you opened up the patient's shirt and found that he had removed his own cardioverter, his own defibrillator, his own pacemaker? What would you do? Want to go ahead and get into our interview segment here with Esther Bernhofer from the Cleveland Clinic. This was an interview actually recorded jointly for both this show and for the nursing show. So we'll be talking a little bit about nursing issues, talking a little bit about EMS issues, but really talking about pain management in general. And I don't think that the topic is something that we have to just leave targeted just one way or the other, and what nurses do, what paramedics do, or EMTs do. There's the topic of pain management transcends all of the care professions and really should be a targeted goal of every one of us. No matter what our skill level, what we do, we should be thinking about managing our patient's pain all the way through the process, from the first call to 911, all the way through patient's discharge and beyond from the hospital. So without further ado, let's jump in here and check out this interview segment I did with Esther Bernhofer, a pain management nurse from the Cleveland Clinic, and met her recently in an article interview that I did for the Nursing Notes Live podcast, one of the shows I do for the Johnson & Johnson Campaign for Nursing's Future. And I thought it'd be great to invite her here over to my shows to share her expertise with you all. I'm really excited to have with us on the show a pain management nurse, Esther Bernhofer, from the Cleveland Clinic. Esther, I had the chance to talk with her back a few months ago in regard to the Nursing Notes Live podcast, and we did a whole series on pain management there. And I talked with Esther about her experiences and some of the things she's doing to deal with pain management at the Cleveland Clinic. And I really wanted to have her back to talk about pain management in this series here for our show. So, Esther, welcome to the show, and it's really great to be able to talk with you again.
Thank you very much, Jamie. I'm glad to be here.
So, Esther, what I want to do is start off with just kind of mentioning we've been talking about the physiology of pain on the show for the last couple of weeks, and wanted to kind of bridge that into a look at the importance of interpreting each patient's pain separately, that it really is a personal experience to each individual, and there isn't as much correlation from individual to individual as you might see is comparing blood pressures in a given situation. It's really a personal experience. Would you like to just really briefly expound upon that a little bit?
Well, I think that is really important to remember that because pain is experienced in the brain and in the mind, even though if we get hurt, you know, in our fingers, we think, well, the pain is in the slice where I cut myself with a knife. That's where the pain is in my finger. It's actually experienced in the brain. And because it is so individualized, and it is so subject to the individual's prior experiences as well as current setting and everything else that is going on with the individual, pain has a different meaning and a different sensation from one person to the next. It's very hard sometimes to describe how someone's feeling, and it's hard to project as a nurse, you know, what you think someone else might be feeling. After surgery, for example, we say, well, the pain is at the surgical site. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's where it emanates from. But the way a person experiences that pain at that surgical site has a whole lot to do with where they are in their life, how old they are, how they react to medications, how they feel they should react to pain. Even their genetics, their genetic makeup, we're now looking at genetics determining the experience of pain. Everything in their background, everything from a religious background to a history of alcoholism, even if the person's been sober for 10 years, all kinds of things add up to how the person really, really feels about that pain.
It really is seems to be just based upon so many different factors that it can be difficult to objectively assess someone's pain. I know where you are, you had this Pain Champions class, and you're actually changing the name a little bit. Talk a little bit about what you tried to do in that class and empower the nurses there to be that advocate for their patients, and why are you changing the name to something different?
Well, our Pain Champion program started out over 2 years ago in an effort to really educate nurses, all nurses on all different units, all across the Cleveland Clinic, on what everything from basic physiology to pain and basic ways that we treat pain pharmacologically, non-pharmacologically, everything from procedural blocks and things like that, trying to just get a good handle on what pain is and what we do here. Then we worked into that class as well, good pain assessment skills and trying to let go of personal biases and biases on the part of the nurse caregiver, that is, as to how one, you know, looks at the person with pain and how we can do a better job of pain management when we get rid of some of our biases. So we had this idea for Pain Champions, not unlike many other large hospitals across the country using the term Pain Champions. Some use the term Pain Resource Nurses, or PRNs, which was kind of cute. The idea is we're going to educate our nurses on pain and all the different aspects of it so that they can go back to their job, their practice, and do a better job assessing pain, understanding it, advocating for the patient, understanding what types of treatments might be better for individuals, and that kind of thing. So we've been doing that for a couple of years here, and having these 8-hour-long classes for about every 2 months, maybe every 3 months, depending how our scheduling, how we were able to schedule conference rooms and things like that. But every couple of months, we'd have these, we offer these 8-hour classes, and the idea was that we were going to nurses who attend these would be called pain champions, and then they would go back to their units and be that champion, the person, the go-to person who has just a little bit more knowledge than maybe some of the other staff nurses. And if a staff nurse said, hey, I don't know what to do about this person, they could seek out that pain champion on the unit and say, what do you think, you know, in, you know, from what you've learned, what should we do? And they could, you know, commiserate together and figure something out and approach the physician if they needed an order and that kind of thing. So that was the idea of creating these pain champions on the units. The problem was with that we got an awful lot of feedback, which was really positive, and a lot of the feedback from some of these nurses were, why doesn't everybody take this class? Why is this just for these select pain champions? I never knew this. I never learned this in nursing school. Why don't the doctors take this class? You know, so we had a lot of really positive feedback, and people were like, you know, we really need to do more, you know? And then the other problem that we had, though, was that and the pain champions that we did sort of create and went back to their units did have a bit of a difficult time doing those things that we envisioned them doing, because they were they were taking care of their own patient load. They still had their own patient assignments, and it was difficult to incorporate that pain champion idea on the unit. And we thought, we've got to figure something out. Do we give them extra time? Do we give them an extra block of time during the day where they don't have a patient load, where they can do assessments and help other nurses? You know, how is that going to work? Mm-hmm. So it's evolving.
And then you decided that pain champions maybe wasn't the best title for this program.
Yeah, actually, that is something that we're looking at for 2012. Our last pain champion class at so entitled and so following the same model is now coming up November 11th, and we're still going to go with that. We've got quite a few people signed up. Everybody's excited to go to this because they've heard about it, you know, from other nurses, so it's all great. But we were thinking, you know, what does that mean to be a pain champion? What is it we're trying to do? So what we've come up with is in 2012, we're going to try a different model. We're going to have quarterly, that is, you know, one every 3 months, still 8-hour-long classes, but it's nursing pain education. It's for everybody. We're no longer going to try to target just to those people who want to be the pain champion, so to speak. We want all nurses and even others. We'll welcome, you know, residents, physical therapists, whoever might want to come and sit in on it, to learn more about the physiology of pain, a lot like what you have just finished doing, cultural aspects, personal biases. How can you look at things objectively? Well, you probably can't. You can just lower your biases and believe the patient's subjective reports. And what are some alternative pain treatments? What can we do, and how can we best advocate for the patient? So those are all the things that will be in that quarterly nursing pain education class. And then what we want to do is create pain mentors, because champion sounds like I'm championing a cause, which is great, which, you know, that's not a bad way to look at it.
Right.
But a pain mentor would be somebody who is more of a teaching role. You know, the word mentor means that's kind of the person you go to. They can help me out. They can mentor me. They can teach me. And so what we're trying to create is pain mentors. And that would be those nurses who really have a real passion for better pain management above and beyond the basics. And they would then attend a shorter 4-hour class that has to do with the population that they're working with. So folks on the digestive disease unit, for example, would attend a 4-hour pain class on how can we help digestive disease patients. And those in orthopedics would look at orthopedic patients and that kind of thing. And we have some experts teaching that, those physicians who deal with those patients, perhaps some of our acute pain personnel from anesthesiology, that kind of thing. Because those different patient populations have different needs. Then after that, those folks who were interested in that would interview with me, and then I would see what they want to do, where they want to go with this, where is their level of passion and knowledge. And then they would go back to their units, and hopefully we could work something out with their managers so they would actually have that flex time to spend during the week with nurses and conduct mini classes, little half-hour sessions on topics of interest for those individual nurses, and sort of be that mentor on that unit, and bring home the message to the locals, so to speak.
And I like that change and shift in the concept is we're going to make this information really broadly available to everyone and make it a concept that we're going to support across the institution, not just for those that are interested, but really for everybody, but
right,
also
exactly.
Give those that are really passionate an opportunity to be even more vocal advocates in their individual settings.
Exactly. Sort of empower them to do that thing which our pain champions we're supposed to do, and really give them the means with management support to be able to do those things. Everything from looking at charts and seeing where there may be some deficiencies to aggressively going after an unmet pain need for an individual patient and trying to think outside the box and find all the resources that they can and do that. And also to talk to people as soon as they're admitted. And as soon as someone's admitted and they have a pain score that's, you know, greater than 5 out of 10 or 3 out of 10, if 3 is really bad for them. Everyone, of course, rates their pain differently.
Right.
So if they are not comfortable, if things they are not functioning because of their pain, then perhaps this pain mentor would be able to see that person right at admission and you know, take the bull by the horns right there and not wait for things to escalate and then 10 hours later try to solve a problem. So we're trying to do that and nip things in the bud and really create a great place where nurses not only feel empowered to take care of their patients, but also that knowledge and that ability to do so.
And I think it's great to hear that you're applying this in many different settings so that you can educate the about specific problems that might be seen in a given unit. Pain's going to be different related to orthopedic problems as
right.
opposed to a recent surgical incision.
Right.
Things are going to be different in how we manage that. What about, you said something about really getting somebody to deal with that pain early, that patient right upon admission that's talking about their pain. And you said it could be a 5, could be a 3 because they might be under-reporting their pain. How important
sure.
is it to get ahead of the pain when a patient is saying, hey, I'm uncomfortable?
Well, it's really important, and I know most of us learned this in nursing school or even from our own personal experience that, you know, if I've got a headache and I wait for it to get really, really bad, then the aspirin or the Tylenol that I take isn't going to do as much as if I feel the twinges of that headache coming on and I nip it in the bud. So that applies to most acute pain, certainly, and it is something that we do want to take care of right away. In doing so, we also make the patient feel that we really care for them. Mm-hmm. We're not putting them off. You know, this is a safe place. You tell me you have pain, I'm going to do everything I can to take care of you right now. And that caring feeling, that caring concept, I think is what nursing does best out of all of the disciplines. And that's why I think nurses make the best pain mentors of all the disciplines as well. That's just a little aside. I think nursing does the best with pain.
And I agree. I think because nurses spend so much time with the patients on a one-to-one basis, when they're in that room with that patient and they're the one that the patient's calling at long-term
right.
in a hospital setting. But it doesn't mean that others can't get into that caring role and be more aggressive and more of an advocate.
No, absolutely. I think nurses model that, though.
Yes.
And they should. They absolutely should.
Absolutely.
And the ones we know do, though, right?
Right.
it's part of the nursing paradigm. It's part of the nursing philosophy to take care of the whole patient that way. And we do see them, you know, 8, 12 hours a day, and we do get to know their thoughts and their feelings and some of their background and what makes them what makes them work and what works for them. I had one patient just last week that I saw that she was having a very hard time. They couldn't find a diagnosis, but she, a young person, and she had so much abdominal pain that was real, and people were questioning whether it was real, all that kind of thing. She had multiple surgeries, too, so she herself was quite well-versed on all the pain medications, the side effects, all kinds of options. She was really smart about it. But I walked in and as I'm talking to her, I asked her how her pain. She said, "Well, it's like a 9 out of 10 is because it's really bad right now." Her pain medication wasn't due for about a half an hour. I wanted to talk to her about alternatives and things we could do and work this thing through. And when the nurse finally came in to give her next dose, she said, "Wow, just talking to you, my pain went down to a 7. And now I'm looking forward to this medication taking it down to a 5. So really, this individual needed someone to talk to. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what nurses do well. Sometimes just being there and just talking to our patients or providing that outlet or encouraging the phone call to the friend, all those things that we can do really help with pain as well. We get to know what is it that they really need, and how can we provide for that need.
I think certainly you make up a good point about while our medication management of pain is certainly an important tool in our toolkit to manage pain, there are other things that work very effectively, even just talking to the patient, helping to take their mind off their pain, that distraction factor.
Exactly.
That alone can have a significant effect on helping someone to manage their pain.
Right. And distraction, and sometimes I think nurses or physicians, folks in the medical professions, right, we think that, well, that's kind of poo-poo stuff that we will kind of like, it's just like to make them feel better because we really don't have anything that's going to help you, so I'm going to talk to you for a little while or turn on the TV, And it's not that way. We have good research that shows that distraction and involvement in an activity, purposeful work will really help to relieve pain. Remember what I said at the beginning, that pain really is in the brain. It really is an experience. It's not just a feeling or where that incision is or where that headache is. It is experienced in the brain. And therefore, when we take on other experiences, we can modify that pain. We could also make it worse. Worry, different things like that will make the pain worse. So it is scientific. It is evidence-based. We're still working on the best evidence. But there is evidence to show that distraction and these other things really do help. It's not just like, well, I know that particular dose of morphine doesn't work for you real well, so I'll just turn the TV on. There really is evidence to show that distraction, other types of things, everything from massage, which works on another level as well, can really make a big difference.
And this is going to be played for the medic cast audience too. So we have those paramedics and EMTs listening to this, and often they are restricted in some of the medications that they can use and how much. But again, just having the ability to just carry on a conversation. I tell people all the time, if you've got a patient in there, ask them about their kids, their grandkids, their family,
exactly,
their favorite things.
Exactly.
Get them talking about things that they enjoy, and
yes,
that talking about things you enjoy releases some other things going on in the body.
It does. It does release
you.
Those endorphins,
yeah,
and it really does work. Absolutely, when the paramedic says, along with whatever medication, whatever you're empowered to give, and says, "So what are you looking forward to this weekend? How are the kids? Tell me about, it looks like there was a bike, bike accident. Do you bike much?" Whatever, is really, really important and helps. It also helps the patient feel that the individual cares for them. And I can't emphasize enough that when a person who is in pain understands that this individual really cares about me, that the relaxation that comes from that, the levels of cortisol decrease, the levels of stress decrease when a person understands that they are cared for. And that really can make a big difference in their pain experience.
Well, it reduces their frustration trying to communicate their feelings. If you can give them a sense that you understand they're in a lot of pain and that you care about them beyond just you're my patient for the next half hour or whatever, or the next 12
really
hours or whatever. Right.
And I'm really busy.
You know, I always tell people there's plenty of time to do that report later if you've got a patient in pain or a patient in distress.
Right. The interesting thing, though, too, is that it doesn't always take, it's not like you have to sit at the bedside for half an hour. Sometimes if you pull up a chair and sit down for 5 minutes with a patient, or just spend, you know, you're busy, you're passing Medicaid, you got to get to the next patient within a certain amount of time, but you stay with the person for 90 seconds and tell them, I'll be back when I can because I'd like to listen to your story, and then, of course, go back. But those things make the person really know you care.
So we're going to wrap up. Just wanted to close out with maybe a piece of advice. The next time someone listening to this has that patient that's experiencing some pain that we're having trouble managing for whatever reason, what can we do to better assess and understand that pain? Maybe a tip from you on how we can approach and better understand what the patient is experiencing.
Well, I think my first tip, it's kind of twofold. First of all, if you're in a hospital setting, do make sure that you have looked at all of the things available for this patient as far as pharmacologically goes. There's some times where, you know, so many things are ordered, the nurse just, I don't feel comfortable giving that, I don't want to give that, you know, that kind of thing. Just make sure that you have used everything that's available to you to begin with. But also, spend that 90 seconds, or five minutes, and talk to this individual and see if you can get a feeling for what's important to them. Is it going home to their kids? Is it, I just want to get out of here? You know, and then you can talk about if it's a post-surgical patient, how can we get out of here? I know. Let's get this pain under control. I'll talk to the doctor about your desire to get out of here. We'll just, maybe he can up this pain medication a little bit and we can work on walking in the hallway a little longer today. Whatever is important to that individual, find out. And often it doesn't take much. People like to talk about their lives, you know. So that can be really, really important. See, do a little hunting through the chart and find out what else is going on. Maybe you'll find out that they did have an alcohol addiction 10 years ago, and it's not a current problem at all. But it resets the brain in that 1 milligram of Dilaudid isn't going to help this post-op. Maybe we need 2. Something like that. So do some investigating and spend some time with the patient. Make sure you're using everything available.
That's really good advice, and I think it's a great way to close this out. Esther, I want to thank you both on behalf of our shows here at the MedicCast and the Nursing Show, but also on behalf of the community at large in healthcare for the great things you're doing at the Cleveland Clinic, for your Pain Mentors program, and really continuing to push everyone to be more aggressive and aware of caring for our patients, not just curing them, but caring for them.
Well, thank you so much, Jamie. It's my privilege. I really enjoyed it.
And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of the MedicCast. I want to thank everybody for checking out the show this week and remind you to check out all the information, links, and everything you'll find available for you over at the MedicCast blog, medicast.com/blog. And over there, you'll find a link to the show notes right there at the top left-hand side of the page. You can click that link and go ahead and use it to find your episodes, the most recent episode listed first, and you can scroll down and find everything. Go all the way back to episode 1 if you want to. But we'll find all of that information over there. And I urge you to follow up on the resources there, including links to some of the things Esther Bernhofer, our pain management nurse guest on the show today, is doing. Also links to our other episodes on pain management from earlier this month if you haven't checked those out. You might want to check out our Physiology of Pain review and our pain management episodes, a 2-part episode we did earlier in the month. That's it. We're going to go ahead and get ready to close out. I do want to remind you to get back in touch with me. I'd love to hear from you. So keep those emails coming in, podmedic@mac.com, and also call in on the voicemail line. Let's get some more calls coming in here, folks. It's 941-306-3342, 941-30-MEDIC. So call in on the voicemail line, leave a message, and let me know what you like about our shows, what you don't like about them, what you'd like to see more of, whatever the case may be. Let's share among the community here, and maybe I'll be able to play your voicemail coming up here on a future episode of the MedicCast. You can find, of course, me over on Facebook, Twitter, and other places under the handle PodMedic. And don't forget our MedicCast fan page over on Facebook, facebook.com/MedicCast, where you can click the like button and become an official fan on Facebook of the MedicCast and share with that community over there as well. That's it. I'm going to go ahead and close out the show. I do want to remind you to make sure you're keeping in touch with me and sharing the MedicCast with everybody you know. If you're a student, if you're an instructor, share the MedicCast. Show folks how to get the MedicCast. They can watch the show on the video version of the show right on the webpage. They can get it on a set-top box or on the Apple TV or the Roku or some of the new TVs coming out that have Wi-Fi built into them. There's numerous ways you can get the show and either video or audio version. So share your favorite way of getting the MedicCast with somebody you know and help them find not just our show, but all the great podcasts and other independent programs that are being produced online. Thousands of them every single week, and you can always find something you're interested in, especially over at the ProMed Network, promednetwork.com, where the MedicCast, the EMS Garage, 45 shows about healthcare and medicine and nursing, all available over at the ProMed Network. So if you can't find something to listen to over there that are in it meets your interest in the EMS and healthcare space, you probably can't find anything anywhere. So check it out over there. That's it. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. I'll be back soon with another episode here of the MedicCast. In the meantime, I do want to remind you to remember, Scene Safety, BSI.